This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's subject is integrative cardiology, taking us on a tour through that fascinating realm of integrative medicine. Is one of America's foremost integrative cardiologists. He's Dr. Dennis Goodman. Dr. Goodman's board certified in cardiology, internal medicine, and also something called lipidology. We'll find out what that entails in just a few moments. He's also certified in integrative medicine, and he's an expert on the cardiac CT, so we may have some questions to him about diagnosing cardiovascular disease using non-invasive methods. He is popular in the media. He's a national, international speaker. He has wide experience starting at a very fine center of integrative medicine, the Scripps Memorial Hospital in La Jolla, California, where they really pioneered integrative approach to many conditions. And now he is a clinical professor and the director of integrative medicine at NYU. My goodness, Dr. Goodman. Well, first of all, welcome to Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you.
NYU has come a long way. NYU has come a long way.
I'm very, very proud to be there because they clearly, you know, one of the best medical institutions in the world and embracing this whole concept of integrative medicine, which we're going to discuss. Can I just correct you on one thing for the record?
Sure, please. Yes, go ahead.
Which is that I was head of cardiology at Scripps Memorial, but the sister institution was Scripps Clinic, and it was Scripps Clinic that had the integrative medicine program. So I moved over there with Mimi Guarneri, who's now head of the American Board of Holistic Internal Medicine, and I spent, you know, almost 2 years there, and that's really what got me. I was always interested, but that's where I went and really learned about it, and because this is not something that you can go and do, you know, a few days or a week and take a course and think you're going to be an integrative physician. It's really understanding what it entails today. It includes functional medicine. And I'm sure you know that there's a lot to it. And I to get back to your point about NYU, you know, I'm very grateful that they've embraced this idea that we offer integrative care. And it's going to take a while before we get a lot of integrative physicians on board. But I am a big believer on that. We have to bring together both sides.
Indeed.
And whatever you want to call it, whether it's, you know, traditional versus holistic or allopathic and, you know, Eastern versus Western, it doesn't matter. But we have a huge, as you know, there's a chasm between the two groups. And because traditional medicine, how we taught, you go to medical school, they don't know. The medical students are not taught about what is functional, what is tradition, what is holistic medicine. And I'm proud to tell you that next week we've introduced in the medical school curriculum at NYU, I go with some by the name of Linda Tao, she's another integrative cardiologist. We have a lecture. So we're introducing them to this idea that there is something called integrative cardiology and integrative medicine. And you know, for your listeners, and the question is, well, what is this? And really, what we all trying to do today, I'm sure you'll agree with me, is fight a system that is broken. Physicians are under such pressure; the whole system is under pressure. The insurance companies, are not really supporting, unfortunately, preventative medicine and wellness. Really, physicians and hospitals are reimbursed for what? For tests and procedures. So when you give cognitive services, which is using your brain and your mind to sit and talk to somebody, especially in the world of preventative medicine, it takes a long time to talk to someone about their nutrition, their exercise, how they sleep, their stresses, and that takes time. Unfortunately, most doctors, you're getting 15, if they're lucky, 20 minutes to see a patient, and most of the time that results in a prescription. Indeed. So what is integrative medicine? It's sitting, and this is my approach, is looking holistically at a patient, the big picture. And the big picture for me is, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's the mind, the body, the spirit. And it's not just the heart or the blood pressure or the cholesterol. Let's look at it from a standpoint, what I call holistically, is, for example, let me take high blood pressure. You know, people come into your doctor's office, they got high blood pressure. Very often they land up with a prescription. And what I'd like to do is to sit down and say, hang on, let's see, what is causing your high blood pressure? Sometimes you'll find out there's a major stress in their life that's going on. Sometimes you find out they're just eating way too much salt, and they're not exercising. And so I try really hard to treat people's conditions naturally. And one of the things we'll get to talk about is magnesium, which I love as one of the ways to bring down blood pressure. So just with that little introduction, I'll throw it back to you. I know I was going on a bit.
No, indeed. I just want to backtrack a little bit because I went to med school at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx. And then I went for my internal medicine training at your institution at NYU. Now, this is in the 1980s. And I felt like I had to be a little bit of a stealth holistic person there. I had to keep my cards close to my vest because the acceptance wasn't there. And for many years, it was a very, very conservative institution, even among, you know, hospitals in general. And so I'm extremely gratified that they've, and I think you as a very, I think a diplomatic kind of person, I think that you have spearheaded an effort to make this seem sane, rational, reasonable, and something that is worthwhile, both teaching to young doctors who are in training there as well as to med students. So congratulations to you. It's wonderful.
Yeah, no, thank you. And well said. You know, I think the key is we should not be judging anybody. We should not say, how come those doctors don't get it? Well, they don't get it because they weren't taught it. They weren't exposed to it. When people don't know about something, they often sometimes poo-poo it. You know, supplements is a perfect example. You ask a lot of traditional physicians, they'll say, you know, it's a waste of time, it's expensive urine. At best, they say, well, it probably can't hurt. But it's because they don't know about them. And so I am very much a believer that we've got to gently educate each other. So when sometimes I read books or I read statements from what we call I call them my colleagues, you know, from the other side. They're not on the other side of me, but they are on the other side of traditional medicine. And they'll make statements, the doctors are, you know, the traditional doctors are killing you, or they're writing these drugs that are going to kill you. It doesn't do any good.
Right. That kind of rhetoric is not going to help, you know, just as in our political discourse.
We need to sit down and say, we don't have all the answers by any means, and we should come together. And I'm actually planning, I'm in the planning phase of putting on a conference at NYU called East Meets West, which I'd love you to be involved, Rod, and try to bring people together from both sides, because it's kind of like, I hate to say this, but it's like a peace process. We have to get the sides to come to the table. And we need to hear each other and listen to each other. I mean, I go to a lot of conferences on both sides because I'm a board certified cardiologist, and I'm going to go to the American College of Cardiology. I go to interventional meetings. And then I also go to meetings related to ACAM and holistic integrative medicine. So I meet both sides, but I don't find a lot of physicians like myself there. I don't see a lot of traditional doctors. There are a couple. And then I don't see a lot of integrative physicians, naturopaths, chiropractors, and other people that are very interested in this at the traditional meetings. In fact, I'm very proud to tell you that I think maybe one of the very few, maybe there are less than 10, I only know two of us that are board certified in interventional cardiology, which is, as you know, putting in stents and procedures like that, and also holistic medicine. So I was on a journey where I, for 20 years, was putting in stents, running to the emergency room for treating patients who'd had a heart attack. And I started to realize that, you know, I'm putting out fires like a house that's burning down. And sometimes if you were lucky and all went well, you could literally save somebody's life. But I started to realize that, what are we really doing? We're running to a house when it's burning down. How do we make a real impact, Ron? We've got to get to people before they have an event. We've got to be, if I want to make a real impact and help people, I think I felt like I've got to put my energy into prevention and getting people to take on board that you, to be healthy, you've got to do something. You can't just say, well, I'm lucky, you know, or I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. We know that 80% of these chronic diseases like diabetes, even heart disease, are preventable. It's preventable. I mean, I look at, I don't know how you feel, Ron, but I look at all the money going into diabetes research. Literally millions and maybe billions. And I say to myself, yes, that's important. We want to treat diabetes. Let's come up with new ways to do it. But what I want to see is a huge effort to prevent it. Let's get the kids early on to understand that sugar is going to be ultimately something that can will for sure land up being one of the factors that cause diabetes for people with type 2 adult onset diabetes. And ultimately, as you know, diabetics land up half of them dying from, you know, cardiovascular diseases. So I'm pushing to get people to understand that we do not do our children a favor when you're giving them candy and more sugar because they get to get addicted to it. Mm-hmm. So I think prevention is the key, Ron, and for me, integrative medicine encompasses prevention. So kudos to you, by the way, because I know your program is constantly talking about this stuff.
Yep.
That's why people are so interested, because they're asking, aren't they, what can we do? Because if you wait to have a heart attack and a stroke or someone in your family, people get motivated. I understand that. But a lot of times there's damage that's been done. There's already now disability. Whereas if you can prevent this stuff happening and you prevent these events, you can have a very good quality of life.
Well, let's take a look at one of the areas from which you specialize, which is a certification that you can achieve, is you are board certified in lipidology. What's that all about? And does it entail more than just putting people on statins or the newer, more powerful drugs?
That's a great question. So lipidology, it's the study of lipids. The lipids is your cholesterol and your triglycerides, and your cholesterol is made up of the good and bad cholesterol, HDL and LDL. And there is a board certification, which is not easy to do. You have to learn all about the lipids and actually at a very functional level and basic science level. And how do we treat these lipid abnormalities? And it's very much in the realms of traditional medicine. I mean, there is there's a National Lipid Association. There are a lot of societies because we understand, we all agree that lipids are major, right? Everybody's got to have lipids carrying cholesterol around in the body. And we know that it becomes a risk factor for heart disease, and there's some naysayers who say it's got nothing to do with it.
Some people say cholesterol doesn't matter. Yes, there are outliers. People get heart attacks when they have low cholesterol, and there are people who have sky-high cholesterol, and they're trouble-free. And those are, paradoxes that, pretty common. But
right, we're understanding that there's sometimes if you see the top of the ocean, you don't see what's underneath. And we're doing things now, and I was going to bring this up, lipidology is looking at somebody's lipids, but not just what's your numbers, what's not what's your cholesterol, what's your LDL, but doing something called advanced lipid testing. Mm-hmm. We can actually look at the LDL particle, which is your low-dense LDL particle, and that is atherogenic in general. It's, quote, the bad cholesterol. But within that group, there's bad and very bad. So I try to give my patients an analogy, Rona. I say, we can look at LDL, your LDL cholesterol, and see if it's more likely to cause you problems. In other words, is it more likely to be small and dense?
Mm-hmm.
If it's that, then it's more likely to get into an arterial wall. And I give this analogy, which is if you take a tennis net and you play tennis and you hit tennis balls, obviously, they do not go through the net because that's tennis. But if you were playing with marbles or golf balls, they would go through.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell my patients, I'm going to see how many golf balls and tennis balls do you have.
Very good.
And if you predominantly have tennis balls, your risk, even if your LDL is high, is much lower than if you predominantly marbles. And they understand that concept. And then I tell them, we're not only looking at, you know, the quality, how dense is it, how small is it, but how many numbers, how many of these small little ones do you have? And there's something called LPA, which is a very atherogenic part of the LDL particle. So I spend a lot of my time looking at what I call early detection and treatment of cardiovascular disease. And I do a lot of testing in the realms of advanced lipid testing. And we can talk about this if you want.
Sure.
But I also look for subclinical atherosclerosis. When people come to me and they say, well, do I need to worry about this LDL?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, should I be on a statin? And there's oftentimes where it's not clear whether you should be on a statin.
Just from the numbers alone. You look at the numbers and the numbers may be ambiguous.
We call it primary prevention.
Yeah.
It's not like someone has already had a heart attack or an event where it's very clear in my mind that you should be on a statin. But what I do, Ron, is I get something called a calcium scan. I'm
very
sure
good.
You've discussed this on
yes,
the show.
Yes, indeed.
Or I get an ultrasound of the carotids, where we look at carotid IMT. It's the carotid thickness. So if someone is sitting with a calcium scan, which is a score that we get, it's a computerized score from a test that takes literally less than 5 minutes, and they have a lot of plaque, calcified plaque, that tells me no matter what their symptoms are, and a lot of times they're asymptomatic, they already have the underlying disease process.
Mm-hmm.
That's a person now that we can identify as increased risk. So why wouldn't we be as aggressive as possible to reduce the risk factors? And if it turns out that they have an LDL or a cholesterol profile that I consider high risk, then I will attack that LDL by making it as low as possible.
Mm-hmm. And some integrative doctors, I'm not one of them, are inalterably opposed to using statins. They believe that statins are, you know, it's wrong, cholesterol is good for you. Taking a statin has, you know, dire side effects. And there, let's face it, there are many side effects associated with statins. But for certain select individuals, high risk, perhaps they've had a heart attack, they've had a stent, or they have a very dangerous profile, and they have plaque, demonstrable plaque, you prescribe statins. What's your feeling about that?
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I think that these statins do have side effects, and some people really can't tolerate them. They get a lot of muscle aches. But we should make it clear that one of the things people worry about sometimes, and this is, you know, just because there's been misinformation, is that, well, they're going to mess up my liver. There's never been any evidence that anybody died of liver failure from a statin. It can raise the liver enzymes, and if it gets too high, we can pull back on the statin or stop it completely. Mm-hmm. But that's not a reason not to take it. Clearly, if you can't tolerate it because there are muscle aches and joints and muscle pains, there are some people we have to cut the dose back, or I often add CoQ10, or I start saying, well, let's take it every other day or every third day, and I actually have a few patients where it's once a week. But what's important, which is the point you're making, Ron, if we're talking about a high-risk person, and clearly a high-risk person is someone who's already had an event, we're trying to prevent the second one. We are talking about a lot of studies and data that say that you've got a 1 in 3 chance of preventing another event. So I tell people when they say, I don't want to take it, I'm nervous about what it's going to do to me, I'm going to say, if there were 3 of you sitting here, the person on the statin, okay, is likely not to have an event. So I tell them that you've got a 1 in 3 chance instead of maybe a 90% chance. So it's very, very important that people say, you know what? What are my risks and benefits of a statin? And I always tell people we're weighing up the risk of having muscle aches versus the risk of having a heart attack and stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important that we don't give people misinformation. I know a lot of doctors who think they're terrible no matter what. And I don't get into an argument with them. I just say, look, if you want to be nihilistic, which is to believe that all these studies in secondary prevention are just, you know, what would you call fallacious? Mm-hmm. Fraud,
yeah.
Manipulation of data, that all this is just because, you know, the drug companies have come up with basically a fraudulent situation. I say, go ahead, but it's irresponsible. I am very happy to discuss this with them in terms of primary prevention, because there we have this thing called number needed to treat. How many people do you need to treat?
Right, right.
To save, you know, someone having a heart attack and stroke. And in primary prevention, then it starts to get more questionable.
Yeah, so let's just define our terms again. So secondary prevention means, you know, shutting the barn door after the horse gets out, so to speak. Once you've had an event, whether you have angina or a stent or bypass surgery, or you've had an actual heart attack, I think the studies are pretty clear that statins prevent subsequent events. I think where the debate is, say, you know, you got a middle-aged guy, he's a little overweight, maybe borderline blood pressure, cholesterol is like 250, HDL isn't so great. You know, you put him on a statin, how many guys do you need to treat to save one guy?
Exactly.
The numbers are pretty high on that, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, what I try to do in that patient, it's just so important. I don't like people to think, well, now you're taking a statin, you can go and do what you like. I mean,
that's the one of the worst consequences of that. It eliminates
Exactly. I always say you can out eat any statin.
Okay, very good.
So that's one of my sayings. But I tell people, let's try avoid it by really focusing on lifestyle. Let's get your weight down. Let's start exercising. Let's try to get your HDL up, you know, naturally. And then we can, you know, have a conversation about some of the alternative things to statin. I try very hard to use other things, you know, more natural approaches besides lifestyle changes before I put people on statin. So I'm not pushing them. But what I am clear about is there's very big difference between secondary and primary prevention with statins, in my opinion. And I am telling you that there are some times where I will, for primary prevention, use a statin. And I gave you some examples. If someone's sitting with what I call a high-risk profile, or they've already shown that they're demonstrating plaque atherosclerosis on a calcium scan, or the carotid scan is showing that there's already plaques in the carotids, and it's a young or a middle-aged person, I tell them, you have the underlying disease process. And one of the things we know, Ron, which is one of the, you know, the sad facts of cardiology, half the people who die of a heart attack, it's their first and last symptom.
Yeah. That's bad news.
So we don't get warnings in a lot of time. And if you know that you've got an underlying process, let's be aggressive as possible to prevent progression and plaque rupture.
Good. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause, because as our listeners know, we divide our podcast into two parts. We set the stage for a conversation about what else to do besides prescribing medication. That's the default reflex of many doctors when confronted with cardiovascular risk. And today we're talking to Dr. Dennis Goodman, who's an integrative cardiologist. We're going to talk about natural prevention, diet, supplements, in part two. So stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.